So let's get started. So welcome back, everyone, to the In the Eyes of Our Brothers Shear. We are up to Yosef Part 6, where we last left off, if you remember, was that Yosef was sort of finishing up getting to know his family once again, that the brothers had come down to Egypt, and that they all now realize that their long-lost brother Yosef is still alive. And with all of this said, the family settles down in Goshen. And the remaining and the final years of Yosef's life are what are the most fascinating and the most interesting, because of the fact that it's hard to understand exactly what is going on in the life of Yosef and his brothers and Yosef and his father. In other words, what was their relationship like in these final years? And this is going to be the source of our discussion both today, where we'll discuss Yosef's relationship with Yaakov Avinu, and then God willing next week for our last of the Yosef Shirim, hopefully, where we discuss Yosef and the relationship with his brothers in the final years. So let's jump in right at the very beginning in source number one. It's the beginning of Parshas Vayechi in Perek Mem Zayim Psukim Chav Tes through Lamed Aleph. We see already this interesting tension, if you want to read that into it, in the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef. Let's take a look at source number one. But Yikru Yimei Yisrael Lamus, Yaakov Avinu was getting close to the time of his death. Vayikra Livno LiYosef, and he called to his son Yosef. Vayomer Lo, he says to him, Namatsasi Chayin Beinecha, if I have found favor in your eyes, Simna Yadcha Tachis Yerichi, take a shvua, take a swear to me. Vasisa Imadi Chesed VeEmes, do for me this unbelievable, truthful kindness. Elna Tikvareni VeMitzrayim, please bury me, please make sure that I am not buried in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. V'shachavti im avosai v'nesasani v'mitzrayim v'kivartani v'kivurasam v'yomar anochi esech darecha. He says, make sure that I'm sleeping with my fathers, and I'm buried with my forefathers, my Abba and my grandfather, etc. And Yosef says, of course, I will do exactly what you want to Abba. V'yomar hishavali. But then when it begins to get even more interesting is that Yaakov stresses again, Yosef, don't just tell me you're going to do it. Swear to me that you're going to do it. Vayishavalo. And indeed, he swore to him that he was going to do it. Vayishtachu Yisrael el Rosh Hamita. And then Yaakov Avinu Yisrael, he bows down to Yosef. And there are two real questions that come out of this pasuk. Number one, why in the world is Yaakov Avinu bowing down to his son Yosef? What an unusual thing to do for a father to bow down to their son. I understand Yosef is a very powerful ruler, but why would he be bowing down to him? That's number one. And number two, why does a father ask his son to swear to him? What kind of a father doesn't trust their son enough that he would have to swear to him that he was going to do this thing, this major thing? And you would assume that only a father who doesn't trust their son, which these small factors begin to indicate for us that they might not have had the best relationship in the final years. So let's try to see a few different perspectives over here. So first is, take a look at source number two. It's the Ramban on these psukim. And he says as follows, we'll read it in the English. Jacob did not suspect that his righteous and beloved son, let me just send the sources again for you, Sima, if in case you're interested. Okay, back again. So fine, so source number two. So Jacob did not suspect that his righteous and beloved son would disobey his father's command and renege on the matter which he had promised him by saying, I will do according to thy words. But Yaakov did so in order to strengthen the matter in the eyes of Paro, as perhaps he might not give Yosef permission to leave him, and he would instead say to him, send your brothers and your servants, and they will bring him up there. And maybe that Paro would want the prophet to be buried in his country as an honor and privilege to him. It was for this reason that he made him swear, for it would not then be proper for him to force Yosef to violate his oath, and Yosef too would feel more obligated to fulfill his father's wish on account of the oath. So ultimately the Ramban says, you want to know why a father makes their son swear? Not because Yaakov didn't trust Yosef, chas v'shalom, of course he trusted him, he was still his favorite son, but he made him swear because of the fact that Yaakov knew that Yosef would have to talk to his boss before he took a leave of absence to go and bury his father. and he knew that the boss would only respect the wishes if it was a shvuah, if it was a swear. Evidently, Paro would find that meaningful, but anything short of that, he would not find meaningful. The Rav Shamshon Rafala Hirsch, though, however, takes an entirely different perspective on this. Take a look in source number 3, and I apologize, it's not a direct quote, but it is what Rav Shamshon Rafala Hirsch says. He says as follows. Rabbi Shamshon Rafala Hirsch notes an interesting parallel here. When was the last time that we saw someone take a pledge by placing their hand under the thigh of another person? Under what circumstances did it transpire? Abraham was old, advanced in years, and Abraham said to the senior servant of his house, right, Avram told Eliezer that when he was going to find a wife for his son Yitzchak, swear to me that you're going to bring a woman from my family and not from any of the other families that we do not want to be married as a part of. And says Rav Shamshon Rafala Hirsch, what is at stake here that would demand such a solemn oath? Why does Avraham ask his most trusted servant Eliezer to swear? What is at stake here is a basic issue of personal and national identity, the future of the Jewish nation. Were Isaac to have taken a wife from a local tribe, the interaction between Avraham's house and the surrounding pagan culture would have increased, and the family of Avram would have been unlikely to develop and solidify their monotheistic practices. It was essential to bring a woman for Isaac who was not tied to the local Canaanite practices and cultural norms. In that way, the homestead was to remain untainted. And here too, Yaakov, who had lived 17 years with his family in Egypt, could have noticed what a powerful influence the being gripped by the land was. In other words, Yaakov was afraid that the family, that the sons were all going to want to stay in Egypt. What a great country this is. Chutz La'aretz is amazing. The Nile River is great. We have good food. Our brother is in charge. We're treated like royalty. How could we not want to stay here? But Yaakov says, I don't even want to be dead in this country. Don't even keep me buried here. Move me back to my homeland. And in doing so, Yaakov was hopeful that his sons and his grandchildren, etc., would understand that Mitzrayim, Egypt, is not the place to be. Israel, Eretz Israel, is the place to be. The homeland is the place to be. And therefore, he said, make sure that I'm not here. And he said, swear for me, because this was an issue of national continuity. We would only be able to continue as a nation if Yaakov would make sure that it was clear that he did not want to be buried in the land of Egypt. Rabino Bachya, however, adds an additional note, and I think that's a crucial perspective. Take a look at source number 4. Seeing that Yosef had already agreed to honor his father's wish in this regard, Yaakov most recently did not suspect him of reneging on his promise. The purpose of the oath was so that in the event urgent matters of state would claim Yosef's attention after his father's death, or in the event that Paro would raise an objection to Yaakov's remains being taken out. In other words, let's take a look at that first perspective of the Rabbeinu Bachya. Yaakov wasn't actually concerned that Yosef was going to not fulfill the words that he said he was going to do, but rather Yaakov knew that Yosef was a very busy man. He was a statesman. He was the second to the king. He was a vice president. Of course, he has lots of obligations to attend to. So he was concerned that maybe Yosef might try to push it off on someone else. And he said, no, Yosef, you have to be the one to do it, and therefore swear to me to make sure that it was strong in Yosef's heart, mind, and soul. Now, that's one way of reading the Rabbeinu Bachya. Another way of looking Rabbeinu Bachya is to say Yaakov clearly didn't trust his own son enough, because if he really trusted his son, he would know that his son realized that nothing comes above the father's levaya, the funeral, whatever arrangements need to be made. Of course, a good son, a good child would take care of those things. And the fact that Yaakov even questioned him, even though he was such a powerful monarch, such a powerful ruler, may show that there were some issues in the relationship between Yosef and Yaakov Avinu. Okay, those are the perspectives of that second question that we asked. What about the first question? Why does Yaakov bow down to his son? Isn't that a weird thing for a father to bow down to their son? So there are basically three different perspectives that I bring over here. One is Rashi. Take a look at source number 5. Says Rashi, quoting the Gemara Megillah, Maseches Megillah, Tes Zayin Amid Aleph, says that Ta'ala Be'idane Segidle, to bow down to the fox when it's the fox's time. Right? Every dog has its day. Right? So in other words, whenever the dog has its day, you treat the dog like a king. So lahadil, we're not talking about a dog over here, but a father would never normally bow down to a son. But since in this situation, you have a father who has a son who is essentially a king and the country that they're staying in, so it makes sense that Yaakov Avinu would bow down to his son. Right? To lahadil again, as someone brought up in Shul, that they watch the show The Crown, and in The Crown you can note, if anyone here watches it, that the queen's mother bows down to the queen, even though it's her daughter, because to show reverence for the monarch. And therefore, at the end of the day, we have a living example in a beautiful Netflix show that is exactly what Yaakov Avinu did. He bowed down to his son because he was the one in charge, and that was the right thing to do. There are other perspectives as well. And take a look first at source number 7, and then we'll go back to source number 6. The Shadal, Rav Shmuel David Lizzato, one of the Italian commentators in the 1700s, writes, Hishtachavet li Yosef kemach the reason why Yaakov bowed down to Yosef according to the Shadal was that there's two ways to look at this as well. Maybe he was just sort of giving him like a hakara zatov, thank you Yosef for doing this for me. But maybe another way to read it is by looking at that word that he used specifically, kimachziklo. Maybe Yaakov was trying to sort of make sure that Yosef would definitely fulfill this promise. How do you make sure that Yosef would definitely fulfill his promise? Number one, you make him swear. Number two, you bow down to him. If Abba's bowing down to me, says Yosef, then maybe it'll give him an extra ammunition, either as someone said in Shul, to talk to Paro and say, my father made me swear and he bowed down to me, or maybe even personally, again, maybe noting that the relationship was not as perfect as we might have liked it to be, or we might have understood it to be, because the father said, listen, my son may not fulfill my will, but if I bow down, he'll know how important it really is to me. Then finally, there is the perspective, going back now to source number 6 in the Sforno. The Sforno explains that Yaakov was not bowing down to Yosef. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. We have precedent for our Avos bowing down. When else do the Avos bow down? Abraham Avinu bows down where? When? When he's thankful to Hashem. Yaakov Avinu had gratitude to Hashem that he had such a beautiful son that despite the tribulations of his life, he still turned out so great and he still was willing to fulfill his father's will. And in that moment, Yaakov was so grateful, so he bowed down not to his son, that's ridiculous, but rather to Hashem. With this in the back burner, now that we could understand that there are different perspectives here, right? Some people view the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef as beautiful, almost untouched, even though they had so many years and decades that they were apart. Other perspectives, or maybe how we might want to read into it, is that the relationship might not have been as perfect as we would have liked it to be. And with that, therefore, I want to conclude by taking a look at the final perek that we'll look at today, and that is in source number 8, perek Mem Ches in Sefer Bereishis. Chapter 48, in which we see the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef sort of told out and explained a little bit further for one of the final moments of Yaakov's life. Take a look, and we'll make notes as we go through some of the bolded sections that I have for you here in source number 8. So let's see. Sometime afterward, Yosef was told, your father is ill. So that's the first thing I bolded for you. So that's an interesting thing, the fact that Yosef needs to be told that his father was ill. There are two perspectives here that we can share. One is that of Rashi. Take a look at source number 9 real quick. Rashi says he said to Yosef, he means one of the messengers. So skip ahead. Some say that Ephraim was regularly with Yaakov for study. And when Yaakov became ill in the land of Goshen, Ephraim went to his father in Egypt and reported it to him. So Rashi, quoting the Medrash Tanchuma, explains over here that no, Yosef always knew what was going on with his father. He spoke to him regularly. He at least always called him before Shabbos. They had Sunday brunch together. It was very nice. But he fell ill all of a sudden out of nowhere. And as a result, Ephraim, who had a chavrusa with Yaakov, so he ran to go get his father because this happened on a Wednesday and they only saw each other on Sundays. And therefore, it's not to connote that they didn't have a great relationship, that they didn't speak and see each other often, but that this sort of just happened out of nowhere and that Ephraim went to go take care of this. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it can be found in source number 10 in the Das Zakenim. He says as follows, what we learn from this is that whereas Yosef was not a frequent visitor in the province of Goshen, where his father resided, his sons spent much more of their time with their grandfather so that they were aware of any changes in the state of his health. That's one way to look at it. And therefore, the words, Vayikra b'no Yosef, he called for his son. For Yosef means he sent a messenger to ask for his presence, indicated that he did not want to wait for Yosef's next visit. That's one way of looking at it. But then the Das Zakenim is as follows. I have heard from Rabbi Shmuel of blessed memory that the reason that Yosef did not frequently visit his father was that he was afraid that Yaakov would ask him how he had come to be in Egypt in the first place, in which case he would have had to tell him that his brothers had sold him, as a result of which his father would have cursed the brothers. This in turn would have spelled the destruction of the civilized world, seeing that when he had cursed Rachel quite unintentionally, Rachel died prematurely as a result, although the Trophim of Laban had never even been found. We cannot even imagine what the result of Yaakov cursing 10 of his 12 sons would have meant. What the Das Zakenim is referring to over here is the instance that took place with when Yaakov left the house with his wives and with his sons. He left the house of Laban. Laban came chasing after him. He said, it's one thing you're going to leave and steal my family away, but you're also going to take my idols? And Yaakov Avinu, had not knowing what he was talking about, said, what do you mean, Laban? I never took your idols. I never took your trephim. And therefore, Yaakov said, you want to know how honest I'm being? I swear that whoever took your trephim, whoever took your idols, is going to die. And the Mefarshim Chazal teach us that that's one of the perspectives and reasons why Rachel Imenu died early, because of the unintentional curse of Yaakov Avinu. How much more so, says the Das Zakenim, if Yaakov would have really found out what the brothers had done, he would have given them a direct curse, nothing unintentional about it. He would have said, you guys are cursed. How terrible would that be? The world would be destroyed because all the Jewish people would be lost. You can't have a world without the Jewish people. And what horrible things would have taken place. So Yosef said, to avoid all that happening, he said, I have to stay away from Abba. I can't be near my father because he may come to ask me what happened, why I just left for 20 years in the middle over there. And so he said, I had to stay away. Those are the two perspectives. Because one, that Yaakov perhaps was aware, and he just sent Ephraim to go get Yosef, because this happened in the middle of the week, even though they met for a weekly brunch. The other perspective is that they had almost nothing to do with each other because of the fact that Yosef was so fearful that Yaakov would come to ask him why he had gone missing for all of those years, and thereby accusing and blaming the brothers for what they had done. Okay, so that is how we might take a look at that first line of the parak. But let's go through a few more of the bolded phrases over here, and let's try to understand and see a little bit more context that can help us understand the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef. So he took with him his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. When Yaakov was told, your son Yosef has come to see you, Israel summoned his strength and sat up in bed. This is also an interesting thing over here. It's just like the fact that Yaakov bowed down to his son in the last passage that we saw. So too, why would a father who's sickly, he's on his deathbed, how many hours does he have left in this world? He sits up for his son. I don't care how special of a ruler he might be, but the point seems to be clear that Yaakov felt the need to give kavod to his son, whether it was because of some things that we said before, that maybe he wanted to make sure that his son would certainly fulfill his will and have ammo for Paro when he tells him he's going to bury him, or maybe the fact that Yaakov just believed that one has to honor the monarch, even if they are the one's own very son. Let's keep reading. And Yaakov said to Yosef, Kel Shakai appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and he blessed me and said to me, I will make you fertile and numerous, making of you a community of peoples, and I will assign this land to your offspring to come for an everlasting possession. Now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt shall be mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, no less than Reuven and Shimon. The significance over here in my mind is clear. It's that Yaakov is trying to tell Yosef, regardless of how we are to understand the relationship between the two of them, that Yaakov still valued Yosef and viewed him as the bechor that in his mind he always was. He gave him the double portion that you would give the firstborn, unlike any of the other sons, right? Yosef has two sons, the two oldest sons, that each will get their own tribe, whereas all the other brothers only get one tribe. The love, compassion, and care that Yaakov still has for Yosef is clear. Whether or not the relationship might not have been as perfect as we would have hoped, that's another point. But the point here is clear that he still viewed him in this lofty way, and that's why Menashe and Ephraim get the positions of being like a Reuven or a Shimon. They get their own tribes as well. Let's keep going. But progeny born to you after them shall be yours. They shall be recorded instead of their brothers in their inheritance. I do this because when I was returning from Padan, Rachel died to my sorrow while I was journeying in the land of Canaan, when still some distance short of Ephrat, and I buried her there on the road to Ephrat, now Beit Lechem. Again, he's bringing up Rachel Imenu because he's trying to tell Yosef, You know that your mother was my favorite wife, and therefore you know that you too, my firstborn son from that wife, that you are my favorite, you are my most beloved as well, even despite all of the craziness that has happened in our lives and our relationship together. Now let's skip finally to the last bolded part. Yosef took the two of them, Ephraim with his right hand to Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand to Israel's right, and brought them close to him. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, thus crossing his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph, saying, the God in those in whose ways my fathers Abraham and Yitzchak walked, the God who has been my shepherd from my birth to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all harm, blessed the lads, and then in them may my name be recalled, and the names of my fathers Abraham and Yitzchak, and may they be teeming multitudes upon the earth. And when Yosef saw that his father was placing his right hand on Ephraim's head, he thought it was wrong, so he took hold of his father's hands and moved it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's. Not so, father, Yosef said to his father, for the other is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head. But his father objected, saying, I know, my son, I know. He too shall become a people, and he too shall be great. Yet his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall be plentiful enough for nations. What in the world is going on over here? What an odd scene, an odd way to conclude the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef. What is going on over here? And there are a lot of different perspectives that we can bring and explanations that we can offer to try to understand this, but perhaps I'll leave you with this final idea and trying to understand why this all took place. And we will certainly analyze this more when we get to talking to Manasseh and Ephraim in a few weeks. But maybe we can understand that this scene is meant to be the culmination point of centuries and millennia of bad sibling relationships. Many of the Mefarshim talk about the fact that since the beginning of time, since Cain and Hevel, the beginning of Bereishis, siblings and the way the parents interacted with the siblings has always been sort of messed up. You'll be hard out to find a family in Bereishis that doesn't have some weird family dynamics, and usually it has to do with how the firstborn interacts with one of the later born children. And here too as well, perhaps what Yaakov was saying to Yosef was that I'm going to make the same mistake again. And Yosef said, Abba, you're making the same mistake again. You're going to mess them up. Ephraim's going to be mad at Manasseh. Manasseh's going to be mad at Ephraim forever. You can't do this. But Yaakov said, no. Even though every family until now, the younger was always favored and the older always resented the younger as a result of it, your children are different and your children will be the beginning of a different revolution in the world, where even if the younger is raised up to a higher level of kavod, the older one will not come to resent him. And you want to know why, Yosef? Maybe what Yaakov was telling his son when he said, I know, my son, Yadai Bani, I know. What was he saying? He said, I know one thing, Yosef. And that is, despite all of the craziness that our family has been through, despite all the craziness that you have been through, you want to know who was able to break the curse of Sefer Bereishis, to break the curse that even when the younger son is favored, that the older son will no longer resent him? You, Yosef, you were the one who was able to raise their children in such a holy and such a special way that even though in history the younger one will get more kavod than the older one, unlike in every generation previously, the older one will not come to resent the younger one. And so too we see that Ephraim and Manasseh, throughout all of Tanakh, they seem to get along just fine. Two brothers, you would think that they would have resentment towards one another. The younger one is maybe a little bit of a higher level, but no, they are perfect together. They seem to have no real conflicts between the two of them. And the reason why is because Yaakov told Yosef, you fix this. You fixed humanity. You fix the ability in the younger child to be able to be raised up if he truthfully does deserve it and to not have the older one resent him. And therefore, because of that, in these final moments of their relationship, we see that Yaakov was telling Yosef, you did an amazing job. I may have missed out on so many of your formative years. I missed out on your wedding. I missed out on the birth of your children. But I see who you are. I see what you did. You are responsible for breaking this curse in a sense. And as a result, the final moment of the relationship is about Yaakov saying, I see you for who you are, Yosef. You are an incredible person. And I'd like to take some credit for that, but you also are able to do it on your own with the help of Hashem. And that's what makes you so special. And that's what will make your children so special as well. With that, we can understand the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef might have had bumps, might not have been perfect in these final years, but ultimately was very special. And ultimately was something that maintained maintained its strength even throughout all the tribulations in their lives. Next week, God willing, we'll hopefully conclude with Yosef speaking about the relationship that Yosef had with his brothers at the end of their lives, and taking a few more things of note, right? For example, the fact that Yosef's bones were taken out of Egypt. Why was that important for us to know? The Torah makes a point of mentioning that Moshe Rabbeinu takes them out of the Nile River, and ultimately to try to learn some lessons from the life of Yosef. What are we meant to garner from the incredible life of Yosef HaTzadik? All for next week. Bezrat Hashem, but for now, have a great night, everyone, and Shavua Tov to all.
Thanks, Rabbi. Shavua Tov.
Have a good night, Sim. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.